Relationship Center. I'm psychotherapist, couples counselor, and dating coach Jessica Engel. And this is I Love You Too, a show about how to create and sustain meaningful relationships.
I'm dating and relationship coach Josh Van Vliet. On today's episode, we're going to talk about dating as an anxious, highly sensitive man. We're so happy you're here. And please remember that this show is not a substitute for a relationship with a licensed mental health professional. Hello and welcome, dear listener. We are thrilled you're joining us today for a conversation all about dating as an anxious, highly sensitive man.
Yes. Well, before we get started, if you love our show, well, we love you too. And we want to be in touch between episodes. To get more free dating, relationship, and social anxiety advice, please go to relationshipcenter.com/newsletter. Okay, on with the show.
Jessica, you suggested this topic in particular. Tell us why you're interested in this one.
Yeah, well, we work with a fair number of men who don't fit the stereotype of what it is to be a man in the dating world. Mm-hmm. I think that particularly in the Western world, there's sort of this picture of men as James Bond, mm-hmm. right? As that kind of avoidant of intimacy, not deeply feeling, really tough guy who's able to womanize and go out on lots of dates without getting too entangled. And I've just seen a really deep impact on a lot of the men who come to work with us, who are sensitive and who are anxious and anxiously attached and really want relationship. So I just wanted to take this opportunity to talk to you, Josh, about your own experience dating. You are an anxiously attached, at times anxious, highly sensitive man who's now happily married, I think. Happily still?
Very happily.
Okay. Happily married to me, dear listener, just to be transparent with you about that. And I just thought it might be an interesting window into that experience, mm-hmm. talking to you about your dating life, kind of weaving in my thoughts as we go. So, you know, that was sort of a long walk to say, I really want to kind of honor and celebrate the experience of men who are more anxious or highly sensitive in the dating world, mm-hmm. and counter a lot of the dating advice that's out there for men.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of it is rife with toxic masculinity, with gender essentialism, with the expectation that you're not anxious and you're mm-hmm. not sensitive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, as someone who I was going to say proudly identifies as anxious. But yeah, I will claim that. Like, I think it's, it flies in the face of everything we're taught as men. And I think even those of us who maybe consciously don't buy into a lot of that, it's hard to unwire some of that stuff in the ways that it shows up in the places where we don't want to be open about that we're anxious sometimes, or that we get depressed sometimes, or that we have big feelings, period, right? Or that we're highly sensitive. And so, that's a long walk to say. I'm proud to acknowledge that I'm an anxious, highly sensitive man. So I'm really excited to dig into it with you.
Beautiful. Well, I appreciate you being willing to be vulnerable. And I imagine our dear listener is curious about you and may mm-hmm. want to hear a little bit more about you. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's just briefly touch on a couple of the terms we've thrown out here, just in case our listener isn't familiar with them. One is anxious attachment. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so anxious attachment, just briefly, is when we have a tendency in relationships to fear being left or abandoned. Mm-hmm. And we sometimes assume that other people are rejecting us when they're not.
Yep.
Okay. Some classic signs of this in dating are if the person you went on a date with is not responding to your text quickly, you get really, really anxious. Mm-hmm. Okay. Or you have a general sense of, yeah, but is anybody ever going to really stay? Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's anxious attachment. Let's also talk about the highly sensitive person theory. Josh, do you want to kind of jump in and share what you remember about what it is to be an HSP?
Yeah, essentially it comes from Elaine Aron's work around high sensitivity, and it's a trait that she's identified, and a lot of research backs this up. This is a recognizable trait that many people have. I want to say it's like 15 to 20% of the population?
So originally the research showed 15 to 20. I just recently learned more updated research shows it's anywhere from 20 to 30% of
people.
That's
right. That's right. Yeah. We were just talking about the other day. It's wild how common this is and how talked about it is for a lot of folks. And I know you can give some of the more nuances of exactly what it means to be highly sensitive, but the kind of baseline is it's a way of processing information, processing input that we just take in more input from the world. We'll pause here because
our cat, pun intended,
has made an appearance on the podcast. Hi, Neshi. There's something you want to say about high sensitivity? Yes, that's right.
Meow, meow, you're a high sensitive cat. Why don't you come down here?
Settle down right there. That's perfect. Mm-hmm. Okay. So one of the major features of high sensitivity is that it's related to how we process information, and that, I don't know, the way that I imagine it sometimes, and tell me if this is accurate, Jessica, but the way that I imagine it is almost like the aperture on a camera. You know, that like little thing that controls how much light gets in. Mm-hmm. That it's almost like the aperture is a little wider. So yes. More light is hitting the photographic plate, or, you know, whatever, the digital sensors at this point. Which is not necessarily good or bad, right? It's just different. It's mm-hmm. a different thing. But if you are operating as someone who's highly sensitive in a world that does not expect high sensitivity, and expecting yourself to respond in similar ways to other people who are not highly sensitive, it can be very confusing and sometimes painful. It's like, why can't I, you know, stay at this party? For it. Everyone else seems to be having a great time. I feel overwhelmed and anxious. There must just be something wrong with me, right? Is often the place that we go to with it.
Yes. I think that's a beautiful metaphor for it. Yeah. So scientists have named the trait that's underlying high sensitivity sensory processing sensitivity. Mm-hmm. And so it's exactly what you're saying. So I'm also an HSP. You and I, we take in more information than moderately sensitive or lowly sensitive person. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it's not better or worse, but it can mean that we tend to get more overwhelmed in situations where a lot of the population, 70 to 80%, seem just fine. Mm-hmm. And our world is really built for lower sensitivity people. And so there can also be a lot of messages towards highly sensitive people that, like you're saying, something is off or strange, that they're shy, or even that they're introverted. There's actually a lot of extroverted, highly sensitive people. Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit of an overview on high sensitivity. And I'll just add that maybe contrary to what some people would assume, half of HSPs are male. Mm-hmm. And so that's going to be part of the conversation today.
Yeah. And check out Elaine Aaron's website. We'll link to that in the show notes for more information about that. Including, I think there's an assessment on there for discovering if you are or might be highly sensitive.
That's right. Okay. So I thought maybe we've already named a couple of your identities, but mm-hmm. I thought we might just leave a little space for you to share any other identities that feel pertinent to people understanding, you know, your dating experience and how you move through the world. And maybe just like a little bit of a kind of summary of your dating relationship experience.
Sure. Well, I'm identify as male, straight, white, and yeah, what else might be relevant here? Anything in particular you have in mind?
Well, we've got the highly sensitive, anxious, and at times anxiously attached. When you and I were talking about this episode, we were like, originally actually framing it as dating as an anxiously attached man. Mm-hmm. But as we talked about a little bit more, we saw something that we've talked about in previous episodes, which is you have a mixed style, as most people do.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I would just say that you have a mixed attachment style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Able-bodied, tall. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think part of why I'm having you identify some of these identities is, you know, just to name that, it seems like you had the winds of privilege at your back in some ways.
Yes, absolutely.
and not in other ways, mm-hmm. right? Like we named kind of at the top of the show, being anxious, being highly sensitive as a man, there's a lot of negative messaging around that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. And so then give us like a little like taste of like, what did Josh's dating and relationship journey look like?
Sure. Well, let's see. In brief, I'd say I was basically a serial monogamist and with like a brief exploration of polyamory that just enough to learn that it was not a good fit for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I started dating fairly young compared to some folks. You know, I think my first like real relationship was when I was 13, 14. And yeah, I've had a number of kind of long-term relationships in my life. At the same time was kind of somewhat puzzled as to how to get into relationships. I feel like several of the relationships I had, I didn't feel like I intentionally, you know, I like kind of stumbled into them and they were great for that period of my life. And, but it wasn't, I think until later in life where I was really looking for my life partner that I got more serious about what is dating really? Like, I don't think I'd ever thought about like, I don't even know if I'd actually gone out on a date. Like I'm sure I'd, you know, gone out to dinner or, you know, whatever, like date activities, but like, we are going on a date together out, you know, I'm taking you out to a restaurant or we're going for, you know, with somebody that I didn't know well or, you know, that kind of thing. So it was definitely a whole like learning curve for me around that at that point in my life.
Well, I'm wondering, you know, this is a bit of a broad question, so go with it where you want. How did you see your anxiety, your attachment styles, your sensitivity showing up in your dating experience?
Well, I think the funny thing is I didn't see it at first. Mm-hmm. It was just the water I was swimming in, right? It was like, I didn't know another way of being in dating. And so I remember very distinctly a conversation I had with a therapist many years ago. We were talking about dating and this person I'd been on a date with and she did something I didn't like and I felt kind of hurt by and I didn't say anything in the moment. I just kind of like let it go. And he's like, well, that sounds like kind of an anxious response. And I'm like, what? What are you talking about? That's just like a normal response. That's how anybody would respond. Come on. And as I sat with it, I'm like, oh, you mean like there was another option where I could have been like, oh, that hurt.
Yeah.
And I was like mind blown that that was even a possibility on the table, right? Just, and I think that's a great example of waking up to all the places where I maybe held back or like didn't address things directly that weren't working for me out of a worry of losing the connection or feeling really hard or uncomfortable or not knowing how to do that. So that's definitely one way that it showed up. Yeah, I can think back to another relationship that I had where I was really fixated on this person being the one for me. And I think in that fixation, I think that fixation was probably a mix of things. Some of it like a fantasy about who this person was and who we were together. Some of it like anxiety, right? Like not wanting to be left, like so wanting it to be it. And wanting that secure, like partner base, like that teammate, and also like the anxiety that I'm not going to find that person if this isn't it, right? This is like the closest I've gotten, and it's really hard, and it's like uncomfortable, and it's upsetting sometimes, and it's not working. But if this isn't it, I'm not going to find somebody because who's going to want to be with me, I think, is the underlying worry, right? Of that kind of self-judgment or like low self-esteem. And so, you know, staying in something, and I think this is true in multiple relationships that I was in, staying in something longer than I should have because of that anxiety of addressing it or finding someone else or moving on and feeling like I could do that.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm hearing in there, interestingly, you know, different themes of avoidance, even though it sounds like a lot of the places where you avoided were coming from an anxious attachment place, which I think is something that can be really confusing for people about attachment styles, how they're named, right? Both anxious attachment and avoidant attachment and disorganized attachment, for that matter, all include a lot of fear and a lot of avoidance, in addition to, in some cases, kind of running towards conflict in a way that's not great.
Yeah.
But it sounds like for you, there was kind of this underlying sense of, if I speak up, if I am truly myself, that's not going to be met with problem solving or compassion or acceptance. It's going to be met with rejection on some level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And so you mentioned that this therapist was really helpful for kind of pointing out to you, actually, that's kind of an anxious response.
Mm-hmm.
How did you work with that in dating? How did you get to a different place with it?
Well, I think I have two answers to that. There's probably more than that in there, but let's start here. The first piece, I think, was something that I learned from a dear friend that I've mentioned on the podcast before, Zoe Toby. He really encouraged folks to look for a partnership of equals. And I think my understanding of what that meant deepened and evolved over time. But one aspect of what that meant is someone who will meet you 50-50, who's going to like meet you on the bridge, so to speak, to reference the Naira Wahid quote, who will, you know, you never have to persuade someone or convince someone to be in a relationship with you. And, you know, I think I had a moment of seeing, oh, I've done this at times. I've been like, trying to like contort myself or like, figure out how to fit myself into this relationship or what this person seems to want or what I think this person wants, rather than, oh, the person that I really want to be with in my heart is someone who wants to be with me exactly as I am. Who's going to be like, great, you're anxious, you're highly sensitive. Awesome. I love that. I'm in. And also, you know, not just that, I have some other qualities too. But but they're not gonna be phased by that part of me, mm-hmm. either. Right? They're not gonna be like, oh God, can't handle that. Mm-hmm. That's, you know. And so I think there was a way in which holding on to that helped me navigate the relationships where it didn't feel like that,
mm-hmm.
Where, you know, it was lopsided or we weren't both kind of in it at the same level. But I think that's maybe part of it. I think along with that, I didn't have this word for it at the time, but pacing,
mm-hmm.
which you've put so much beautiful thought into. I, you know, before we met, the way that I had articulated it is like, I knew that in my last relationship, I had jumped in way too fast, way too quickly, and I didn't want to do that again. That didn't work. And I knew I was looking for my life partner. I wasn't fuzzy about that. It wasn't like, well, maybe we'll just date and see what happens. It was like, no, I'm looking for my life partner. And also, let's take it slow. Who's like, I'm looking for somebody who's looking for a partnership and is willing to take it slow to start. And that was kind of the best words I had for it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I got very lucky when I met you because you had more, I think from your experience, had more thought out what does it look like to pace well. And kind of we got to do that dance together and figure out what the pacing was that worked for both of us in our early relationship. So I think that made a huge difference. But yeah, I think that's kind of what's coming up first. And I'm sure there are other answers as well. It's mm-hmm. almost hard to like pull out what are the different pieces because there was so much in there that I have done over the years.
Right, right. Yeah, well, and I want to kind of like highlight each of those answers, right? So, I mean, what you just said is that you've done a lot of work.
Right.
You've done a lot of work to reflect on what you need, your patterns, and you've done that with friends, you've done that with mentors, you've done that in therapy, and that's, you know, just on a high level part of what's allowed you to manage your own anxiety and sensitivity in dating.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, thank you for highlighting that because it's such a huge part of it, right? Is even being able to observe, oh, I'm anxious right now,
mm-hmm.
right? Even having some distance from that not being so merged with it that I'm just being anxious and acting it out. It's not that the anxiety goes away entirely, but I think even, you know, I remember on our first in-person date, I just said to you, I don't know how to do this. Like, mm-hmm. I was just like, you know, being very direct about, I'm anxious right now, basically. Mm-hmm. And I think even doing that, like having that level of awareness and ability to name that, even though it was uncomfortable, was helpful for me, was mm-hmm. allowed me to like, I'm present now. I'm anxious and I'm fully present because I'm not trying to suppress or hide or get rid of the anxiety. I'm just letting it be there.
Yeah. And it was so helpful for me that you did that. You did that in lots of different ways in our, I mean, you still do it, but in our early courtship. And what helped me about that was it helped me understand what was happening with you, mm-hmm. right? Like it yeah. can be hard. I mean, I'm pretty intuitive and perceptive, and it's, I don't know all the time what other people are experiencing. And so it was helpful for me to know, oh, that look on your face is fear mm-hmm. or is uncertainty.
Rather than dislike or yeah. disinterest.
Right.
Or, yeah,
exactly. Because, yeah. you know, the negativity bias of the brain, particularly for those of us who are anxiously attached or socially anxious, is to interpret kind of vague facial expressions,
yeah.
ambiguous expressions as rejection, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
So it was soothing and calming for me. And it also allowed me to say, oh, well, I know how to do this.
You know how to be with someone who's anxious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Literally do that for a living. and also just like, you know, open up my empathy. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I love that point that you're making, you know, having practices that allowed you to even reflect on what was happening for you so that you had enough of an observing ego to work with it rather than be kind of merged with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was one piece. I also heard in their pacing, mm-hmm. And we'll link to the pacing episode that we recorded, which is huge in terms of, I think of pacing as a way to manage anxiety, mm-hmm. actually.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's mm-hmm. a great point, right? Mm-hmm. Because you are actively modulating how mm-hmm. much you're engaging. Mm-hmm. And giving yourself space to process anxiety, to self-soothe or to get support, to kind of regulate, okay, how much of this anxiety am I up for right now mm-hmm. before going forward
right.
in a clear way?
Right, absolutely. Yeah, and before that, you were talking about working with Zoe and that concept of, well, somebody that you're really going to succeed with in relationship is going to meet you on the bridge, is mm-hmm. going to respond to your anxiety and your high sensitivity with kindness and compassion. Mm-hmm. And what I hear in there is you were given a really like secure attachment priming visualization.
Mm, absolutely.
So you were given an explanation of what it looks like for two people who can operate in a secure functioning way to be in relationship. Like that is the heart of emotional intimacy, is I'm here for you even where you're scared, even where you're vulnerable, mm-hmm. Even where you don't fit the traditional picture of masculinity.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I love that. And so you were able to hold on to that and use that to really assess the relationships that you were in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's a great point because it's hard to know if you're in a good relationship if you don't have any examples of what a good relationship looks like. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say I don't have any examples in my life of good relationships. I'm blessed to know a lot of wonderful couples. And yeah, I think having that as a guiding light, like, oh yeah, this is one of the key elements that the couples I admire have. And that's part of their magic that I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. Is the way that they're meeting each other in this way.
Yeah. Well, and from what I've seen of you in particular, I'm just thinking about the conversations we've had about therapy versus coaching, mm-hmm. right? You are trained as a coach.
Yep.
And I think you've in some ways had more success in coaching mm-hmm. as a client. Mm-hmm. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, I think so.
And I think it just makes me think about how coaching often focuses on having a vision. Mm-hmm. rather than looking back and mm-hmm. understanding the past.
Yeah.
Both are really valuable, but I think some people respond to one better than the other. And so I'm just hearing in there that ethos of, having that vision and how that really led you forward mm-hmm. into what could be.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Because for me, I'm a very like practically minded person. And if I don't see how it's relevant to my life right now, it's hard for me to get excited about something. Mm-hmm. And so I think especially with my early experiences with therapy, it was hard for me to grab onto how this stuff we were talking about the past or whatever was relevant to my life right now.
Right.
And I think maybe coaching gave me an on-ramp to that, to where I can see now much more clearly like, oh yeah, this thing from way back then, I see how that is showing up right now in this moment. And it's impacting how I engage with this relationship or how I, you know, hold back or get anxious about sharing when I'm upset about something or whatever it is. So I think I've gotten a lot more from that lens now, but I think you're absolutely right. Like knowing where I was headed, where I wanted to go was so important for me to kind of pull me forward to even be interested in doing the rest of the work around that. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm, right. Beautiful. Well, I'm wondering what else was helpful for you as an anxious, sensitive man in your dating process? Were there any other turning points for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So one of the things that comes to mind is getting comfortable with expressing interest in
yes.
people. That was not something that came super easily to me. You know, it's like, it's funny. I feel like I have almost like these different parts sometimes. One that feels very confident and kind of when I'm really like in myself. And this, I think I've early in life, this came out most when I was dancing. I did a lot of social partner dancing earlier in life. And that was a way that I just like, I felt like me some of the time, and then I felt very anxious some of the other time. But, you know, it was one of the ways that I tapped into that sense of feeling good, feeling confident, feeling like in my body, feeling just connected with who I am. And then there's this other piece where I felt very shy, very like anxious about expressing interest. And in particular, I don't know if this is true about all highly sensitive men, but certainly for me as a sensitive man who grew up with a lot of dear female friends, seeing them go through a lot of pain and suffering at the hands of other men, I was very conscious of, I do not want to replicate that stuff. I do not want to be a man who causes harm. And I love that part of myself. I honor that. And also there were ways in which I overcorrected, that I went so far from, I'm going to stay so far away from doing anything that could possibly cause harm, that I wasn't even expressing interest when, you know, the other person wanted me to, probably, you know, that I'm sure there were moments earlier in my life where someone probably was interested in me and I was so overly respectful that it was hard for me to find that middle ground of respectful expression of interest that is so possible, it turns out. It's not actually even that hard necessarily, but can feel very scary. Mm-hmm. And so learning, and you know, I went to various workshops around things like this where I picked up helpful stuff. You know, part of this I think was just through my coaching journey and getting support from various coaches and mentors. You know, I went through this process in my life, kind of when I hit this moment of, I want to find my life partner, that I saw, well, I have to explore every possibility. And there are people in my life at that point that I had maybe had a crush on or had some interest in, and I'd never said anything because I didn't want to mess something up. I didn't want to make somebody uncomfortable. I didn't want to blah, 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 blah. And it was scary. It was very scary. But bringing it up both helped me practice, helped me see, oh, I can do this. It's really hella uncomfortable, but I can. And I'll survive if they say no, which they did, thankfully, because it wasn't the right match. And it gave me, it kind of helped me build confidence of like, okay, I can do this uncomfortable thing. I can tell this person, hey, I really like you. I think you're pretty great. I'd love to go on a date with you if you're interested in that. Or, you know, on a date, right? There are all these moments where we have the opportunity to express interest, affection, you know, invitation for connection that we miss sometimes out of anxiety. It's like, oh, I want to say something, but I can't tell if this person's vibing with me. I can't tell if they like me. And so I'm just going to not, right? And so I know there were a number of dates that I went on that may have led to something more if I had been more clear in expressing my interest, but didn't ultimately. And so learning to be like, hey, I think you're cute. I'd like to kiss you if you'd like that. You know, or whatever, your own version of it. But being able to be grounded enough in myself that I can both recognize, oh, I'm attracted to you, I'm interested, I'd like to kiss you or whatever it is. And expressing it directly, right, without being like, would you like to kiss? Right, which, you know, listen, they're all great ways to do it. And I think there's a way that when we are able to tap into like, I have a desire, I'm going to express that desire, and I'm going to express it in a way that really lets you know I'm okay either way. Yes or no is welcome. Yes, no, maybe, you know, all of that's welcome. And it's important to me to let you know this. I think it's sexy. It's like, it's attractive when we can do that. And then, you know, opens up possibilities for some wonderful experiences.
Mm. I love all of what you're saying. And, you know, I'm hearing in there, I think you're right that as a highly sensitive man, there's a very good chance that you came to this conclusion, I don't want to be like all of these harmful men, mm-hmm. in part because of your sensitivity. Not that somebody who has got a lower level of sensitivity can't come to that conclusion, but that you felt probably very deeply mm-hmm. for the people that you saw in your life who were being harmed.
Yeah, absolutely.
You were more deeply affected. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's like, you know, my heart, like you said, like I so honor that part of you. Mm-hmm. What a huge-hearted, sweet, kind part of you. Mm-hmm. And I also am so impressed by how you were able to see, oh, I've overcorrected. Mm-hmm. It's so common mm-hmm. and it's so understandable.
Yep.
And you then, what I'm hearing, is got support mm-hmm. around how to get out of your comfort zone and find the sweet spot. Mm-hmm. You went to workshops. Mm-hmm. Knowing you, I'm guessing you probably talked to people about it, friends, coaches.
Absolutely.
And you were willing to be uncomfortable mm-hmm. and to challenge that growing edge and to connect with your own desire. I think that, like you said, that's the first step. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of men that we work with who end up in the quote unquote friend zone over and over again, they very often are dissociated from their own desires when with other people. Mm-hmm. Like they're only able to maybe access it on their own. Mm-hmm. Because it's so terrifying, because they've seen that there are men in the world who, when they connect to their desire, then jump to harm. Yes, so I love what you laid out there. It's first reconnecting with yourself and second, learning how to communicate that in a way that is empowered while also leaving space for the other person to say no.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, even as you were saying that, it just occurred to me also to name like part of connecting with your own desire is recognizing when it's not present mm-hmm. as well as when it is present. Because part of the messaging for folks who are raised male is you have to be turned on all the time. Mm. You have to always be ready for sex. You have to want it all the time. And that's just not true. Mm-hmm. It's just not. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think there were dates that I had also where I was like, maybe like trying to go for something more, but not really wanting it. Mm-hmm. And then kind of feeling bad when they weren't interested, but also like not bad. And it was just like this weird mix of experiences of like, I feel like I just got turned down, but also like, I didn't really want that. Mm. Why was I doing that? Like, in this like funny, funny mix. And so I think there's just something so important and precious about honoring when we're not interested also, mm-hmm. because you have to be able to say, I'm not interested in order to say I am interested authentically, mm-hmm. and allowing ourselves to experience both. And it's like, yeah, great.
Well, right. It sounds like it's like two sides of the consent coin, right? Yeah. If you're allowing the other person to say no, mm-hmm. you have to allow yourself to say no.
Yeah. Yeah. And even with the same person in different moments, mm-hmm. right? Attraction is not a constant. You either are attracted to somebody or you're not, you know, binary period. It's like an emotion. It comes and goes. If you study Emily Nagoski's brilliant work around how desire works, dual control model, there are things that push on our brakes that kind of turn it off. There are things that push on the accelerator that turn us on, and that not being attracted or not being attracted, but like not wanting sex in a given moment mm-hmm. is not also an indicator that this relationship is doomed, or, you know, it's just like, okay, great. You just don't want sex in that moment. That's okay. And then later you probably will. And that's okay too. And having spaciousness within yourself for both of those states, I think is so valuable.
Absolutely. I'm glad that you're saying that. That's a very worthwhile reminder. I'm thinking back to where we started, where I sort of spoke to the James Bond mm-hmm. kind of stereotype that mm-hmm. men are expected to fulfill. And in truth, that's a very dehumanizing stereotype. Mm-hmm. It does not allow for exactly what you're saying, to have lots of different levels of desire moment to moment, even within the same relationship, right? Yeah. And if we're talking about that vision that you described, that you learned from Zoe, of, you know, your partner being able to meet you wherever you are, that's a very humanizing stance, mm-hmm. right? And so I just appreciate what you're saying. And I think it goes right to the heart of secure functioning and healthy relating. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about a conversation we had the other day. I don't know how we got there, but I think I asked you something along the lines of like, well, if you were single in such and such a situation, mm-hmm. how would you ask that person out if you're interested in them? Mm-hmm. Which led to lots of great conversation. Yeah. These are the things that if you're married to a dating coach
or a dating therapist
or a dating therapist, you get asked on the way to the grocery store. I think we were actually talking about the grocery store, right?
We really were.
We were. Yeah. Cause I don't know how we got there, but I was saying to you, well, one of the things that's in kind of pop culture dating advice, or at least was a few years ago, I don't know if it's as popular as it used to be, is if you're single, go to the grocery store mm-hmm. to get picked up. Mm-hmm. And there's like a grocery store in San Francisco that's known for lots of pickups. Mm-hmm. And you said something along the lines of like, I would never ever pick someone up at a grocery store.
Uh-huh. I did say that. That's true. That's accurate.
And I said, oh, I have been picked up in a grocery store, so I would like to know everything about this. Yeah. So tell us a little bit more about like cold approaches and asking people out as it relates to anxiety and sensitivity for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a fascinating thing, right? Because some of what we support clients with is things like cold approaches, or, you know, how to connect with somebody that you don't know. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, for me, that's just not an approach that works for me. Mm-hmm. That, you know, I think there was a certain point in my dating journey actually where I was just like, I know people, some people like go to bars and like pick people up, and that's a thing that apparently some people do. I don't think I want to do that. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so to get back to your question, there are, I think, a couple of reasons why I said so emphatically, I would never do that at a grocery store. I think one is what we were talking about a little bit earlier, of like this feeling like I do not want to intrude on some woman's space that I do not know, who's maybe just trying to get her groceries and go home and cook dinner. I don't know if you're interested in getting picked up, you know. I don't say all that to say it's like a bad thing to do, right? It's just for my temperament, it was just like it's not the right fit. And I really thrived in contexts, as we were talking about, either dating apps where the context is really clear, right? Mm-hmm. We're all kind of on this app. Even being on this app sort of expresses that we're interested in something romantically most of the time. And then obviously what you're sharing your profile is even more like, here's what I'm looking for. So it's like this very clear context. That worked really well for me. But outside of that, I think like meeting people in person and getting a chance to get to know them over time was a better context for me also, right? Whether it was dancing or going to a class together or some kind of workshop or like meeting people socially at a gathering or party kind of who are in my community of friends, whatever it is, that there's this way to organically build a connection, build, you know, kind of explore something that tended to work better for me. I just was never interested in like pushing myself to get over the anxiety that would come up about approaching somebody cold at a grocery store or a bar or a restaurant. It was like, that feels really uncomfortable, doesn't feel worth it. And yeah, I'm just going to put my energy other places.
Yeah. And I love that story because we do work with a number of men who come to us and feel like they are failing as men because mm-hmm. they cannot do a cold approach.
Yeah.
And there's things you can do around that. There's exposure therapy. There is a way to get through that anxiety.
Yeah.
And I think I often have the thought in those cases, like, this isn't entirely necessary.
Yeah. What if you didn't have to get through all that? I mean, you could get through all that anxiety, but what if you didn't have to?
Right.
What if it could just be a little easier?
Yeah. And I think for some men, there's something about that they need to feel like they've conquered that mountain.
For sure.
I think the place where I start to get a little bit concerned is when they need to conquer that mountain in order to be a good man. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Versus like, no, I really feel inside myself, this is important for me as a human mm-hmm. versus to validate my masculinity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And it's just such a beautiful example of sometimes it can be easier and really paying attention to your temperament and what you're available for and where you can meet people that matches that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things I realized as you're saying this, I think part of the underlying question for me was like, where can I meet people that I'm going to show up most as myself? Mm. Who I am in my heart is going to be most available to me, you know, without maybe as much anxiety or as much whatever else going on. And it was like pretty clear with that question, trying to pick somebody up at a bar, that is so far from my preferred environment, that's going to bring up such a high level of anxiety for me that I am not going to be me in that moment. And so even if I were to have met you in a bar and tried to pick you up, you probably wouldn't have recognized me, you know? I probably would have been so anxious or so uncomfortable that it wouldn't have been like, here's a connection. It was like, what's happening right now? This is... Mm-hmm. And so finding the environments for me, it was like, okay, great. I'm great one-on-one with people. Mm-hmm. I can pretty well like build a connection or explore a connection with somebody on a date where we've met on OkCupid or online, you know, whatever dating app. And that's a context that I can more reliably show up as who I am than at a bar.
Yes. Gosh, what I'm hearing in there that is really worth highlighting is that you were oriented towards that, I'm guessing that vision that Zoe gave you of being with somebody who wanted to be with you, mm-hmm. the true you, mm-hmm. and that was the goal.
Yeah.
And I think that for a lot of people who, and men in particular, who feel like they need to master a cold approach, they're focusing on being their most confident self.
Yeah.
That's a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So I think that is so key right there is, you know, how would the dating world change if the people in it oriented towards where do I get to be my most me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I love that. I want that for folks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I think one of my last questions for you is this piece that we've been talking about throughout of you know, being anxious, anxiously attached, or highly sensitive, that comes with stigma. Mm. And a lot of men can feel self-conscious even identifying that way. Mm-hmm. I think of the men that we've worked with who feel quote unquote needy. Mm-hmm. Not my favorite word, but mm-mm. You know, they're pointing to the fact that they really want to be connected and they feel afraid.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And also feel like that is possibly the most abhorrent thing they could be in relationship.
Right. It's like super unsexy to be needy,
right. Kind
of needy or anxious or.
Right. Yeah. So I'm wondering, did that come up for you in dating, in relationships, and how, and you know, how did you, because I'm hearing the thread through your story is that you did learn how to own these different parts of your temperament in a way that was self-loving mm-hmm. rather than self-hating mm-hmm. and to operate from that place, mm-hmm. Which was something that really attracted me to you, mm-hmm. you know, seeing that, you know, I have similar identities, anxious, anxiously attached, highly sensitive, and seeing that you could claim those in a way that was self-loving told me that you could love me in those places as well. Mm. So I'm just wondering about, like, is there anything more to name in terms of what allowed you to embrace those parts of yourself?
Yeah. You know, I think about the people that I maybe had crushes on or was attracted to at various points in my life who were, what I now know is were attractions of deprivation, to use Ken Page's language for it, that there was something that was pulling me towards them, but it was not healthy relating that was pulling me towards them. It was something else happening there. And, you know, I think it was probably in those attractions that I felt most insecure, mm-hmm. right? That I felt most like this part of myself is not, and I don't even know if it was true, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's part of it. Like, I don't even know if it was true for those people, but it brought up the most insecurity, like, oh, they're not going to be attracted to a guy who's anxious, right? Like, I would really have to be like a cool kid to, you know, I gotta be that calm, confident James Bond. And I think it kind of goes along with what we've been talking about already of recognizing the person who I want to be with wants to be with me as I am. And that it's true. Some people won't be attracted to that. It's just, you know, and frankly, their loss, but they're out there, right? There are plenty of people who will see anxiety or vulnerability in a man and it will land as a turnoff for them. But those aren't the people you want to be with. You want to be with somebody who is going to see you be vulnerable and they're going to be like, ooh, oh yeah. Oh yeah, I want that, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that was kind of a part of the journey there. It was like, let me really like land and sit with, like really hold on to, even in the moments when I get anxious about it. Cause you know, it wasn't like I was ever certain that I was going to find my person. It wasn't like I was ever like, I have done all my healing and now it's just a matter of time before I meet the person because I'm perfectly healed and evolved and have no more anxiety and it's fine. Let's go. No, it was, you know, I'm still anxious. That hasn't changed, right? Like I still have anxiety, but I think in those moments of worrying that someone is not going to want to be with me because of my anxiety or my depression or my fill in the blank, you know, judgment of myself for not meeting the stereotypical definition of masculinity in America, holding on to the person who wants to be with me. Mm. And if that's not this person, good. Like, I'm glad that I'm clear now, right? Like, let me be grateful for they have demonstrated to me that they are not my person sooner rather than later so that I can go on and find my person and not get too caught up in why I'm not their person. Mm-hmm.
I'm just thinking about both the bravery of that stance and the emotional resiliency that you have to build up. Mm-hmm. Right? Because like you said, it's not that you felt like super confident that your person, you were going to meet them. Mm-hmm. So there has to be some kind of fortitude in that, within that fear.
Yeah. And let me be clear. There were plenty of times where I was pretty clear I was not going to meet my person. Mm-hmm. I was like, maybe I'll just be single my whole life, you know? And sometimes I was kind of, you know, had some equanimity around that. But most of the time it was more like depression, really, you know, like really sitting in some despair around it. And so, yeah, I think I just want to name that because it's so often easy to be, got to hear somebody talking about where they are now and think that they maybe didn't suffer in the same way or didn't go through as much hardship or, you know, we all suffer in a little bit different ways. Like we all have our own flavor, but I want to name like the intensity of the hardship sometimes through that process, just so if you're feeling that, you know, you're not alone and that, you know, there is possibility. There is another side to that.
I really appreciate you naming that. And it makes perfect sense to me that you would go to places of, maybe I'm just going to be single the rest of my life. Both because I think most humans get there at some point in their dating journey.
For sure.
And also with anxious attachment, there is what Stan Takin has called an allergy to hope. Mm-hmm. There's just this sort of like long-standing sense of I don't get the kind of intimacy I really want and need. Mm-hmm. There's something about me that sort of makes people leave. So it can be a really easy default place to go to. And then the highly sensitive piece, you know, we highly sensitive people tend to feel our feelings really deeply and difficult things impact us really deeply. Mm-hmm. So we can go to like extremes with our emotions. Mm-hmm. And I think what you're saying is so important because it's not that you always had some sense in the background of, well, it'll work out.
Yeah. If only.
And yet here you are, right? And I'm just curious to connect the dots there for our listener, because what I'm hearing in there is you still were in the game, so to speak. You still kept getting back up.
Sometimes it took me a while, but yeah, I kept getting back up for sure.
Yeah. And I think there are people who don't.
Right.
And so I'm curious about that. How did you keep returning?
Really good question. It's a hard one to answer in retrospect. You know, I think in some ways it comes back to the vision of like, I was so yearning for partnership. And like, I think on some level, I just had a sense like, this can be amazing. Like there's so much life that I want to experience that is only for me available in this particular pathway. That through like deep, deep relationship with a primary partner, with someone that we can just know each other in such an incredible way and have each other's back and support each other and like learn together and heal together and like explore the world together, that, you know, and I did not find it easy to stay in touch with that vision. You know, like I said, there were moments I got knocked out and I was out for a while, right? Which I think was appropriate. Mm-hmm. I think it's totally appropriate to take breaks, to take time to heal. Yeah, I think that's part of the culture of like, we need to push through and just like get up and like not. And it's like, no, you got some feelings to feel, like you got some grieving to do. You know, I don't think I would be here where I am now if I hadn't taken that time, even as scary as it can be, to not date for a while. But yeah, I think what like, you know, I would kind of go through that period of not dating for a while and then be like, I think I'm just getting pulled back in. Like there's something in my heart that just is saying, yes, this is whether or not I find my person. I think maybe that's part of it. It's like in my like most wise self, there was this certainty that's like, I may not find my person, but engaging with this journey is part of what I'm here to do. Mm-hmm. And part of where I'm going to learn what I need to learn in this lifetime. And that, kind of being able to sit with, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if I'm going to meet a life partner. I don't know how it's all going to turn out. But I know I can't not go on the journey.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think what I'm hearing you say is that the vision was really important. Mm-hmm. I think also what you're pointing to is that you have a capacity to hear your small, quiet, wise voice internally. And I think that you do that through a lot of different practices. You take time to listen to yourself, and you've done that through writing and through talking with friends and through meditation, and that you were willing to hear a voice that was saying something that was very contrary to the very loud despair. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, I think we're talking about spirituality. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Leaving space for you to know yourself on a level that's a little mysterious. Mm-hmm. And to allow the possibility that there's something that is guiding your heart that is hard to explain.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Sometimes I'm a little bit shy about talking about this, but I do fundamentally deeply believe we can use, I mean, anything in our life, but I think especially dating and relationships as such an incredible opportunity for growth. That term gets thrown around a lot, growth. What I mean by that is really an opportunity to demonstrate who we are in our hearts, what's really important to us, the values, the qualities that matter most to us, right? Like getting to interact with dating as a chance to like practice being kind, right? I mean, that sounds so basic on some level, but like there's so many things that come up within us that would have us not be kind, not because we don't want to be, but because we're scared or because we're, you know, triggered or upset or just not, you know, paying attention, right? Opportunity to be loving, you know, whether or not you go on another date with the person in front of you. What does it mean to be loving in that moment with them at the stage of dating you're at, right? I don't mean like pretending like you're in a long-term relationship, but like being loving on a first date, you know? What does it mean to be playful? You know, whatever the qualities are that light your heart up, whatever the things that bring you alive, but like what an incredible opportunity if we want to practice and to experience also the joy that comes with demonstrating those qualities, even and maybe especially when things don't turn out the way we want them to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're part of your and a lot of highly sensitive people's sort of like way of moving through the world in spite of overwhelm and anxiety is anchoring into principles. Mm-hmm. And values. Mm-hmm. And you are so growth oriented. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm just hearing that vision of what could be is what has allowed you to step away from the despair or the fear and show up in a way that led you here, mm-hmm. led you to find partnership.
Yep, absolutely.
Mm. Well, is there anything else that you want to say to the anxiously attached, highly sensitive men out there who might be listening?
Just, you got this. like, I'm cheering you on. It's a very particular experience to be you in this world. And it's a beautiful thing. You've got a lot to give, you know, as a result of anxiety and high sensitivity and all the different things that are your particular, you know, mix. Yeah, I think it's a beautiful thing. And there is a partner, I believe at least, there's a partner out there who will be delighted to benefit from your particular mix of who you are and what you have to bring into a relationship.
Hear, hear. And, you know, to support that, I just want to say that I'm so proud that you are my husband. And, mm-hmm. you know, anxiety and high sensitivity included mm-hmm. in all of that. I'm just so grateful you shared your story and are allowing other people to benefit from everything that you've learned. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, babe. You're going to make me blush. Mm. Well, that's all for today. You can find the show notes with links to all the resources we've mentioned in the episode at relationshipcenter.com/podcast.
Yes. And if you loved today's show, go to relationshipcenter.com/newsletter. We'll send you a short, helpful email once a month with informative articles, silly videos, behind the scenes glimpses, and more. Again, that's relationshipcenter.com/newsletter.
Until next time. We love you too. Bye.
Okay. Well, what do we do now?
I think we stop recording.
Okay. Lead us out.
I think that's a wrap.
That's a wrap.
That's a wrap, kids. I don't know who that character is.
Like some sort of like country.
Country kids show.
Maybe a little drunk.
Yeah, should really screen their kids show hosts a little better.